What? We told you we'd be back.
Yeah, we'd be back.
We'd be... Yeah, you'd do it way better than me.
You can't do it, though, because it's like, I'll be back, not we'd be back.
But if Arnie had a sidekick, you know, like if twins were somehow merged with Terminator, you know, they might have a catchphrase.
What if twins was... The other guy was a Kiwi.
yeah. Danny DeVito's character was a Kiwi.
And he was like a farmer.
Yeah.
And he's like, hey, I'm Arnold. He's like, yeah, g'day.
What do you want? Anyway.
Yeah.
We told you we'd be back. We've taken a little bit of a hiatus. It's been a few months.
It's been a minute.
It's been a minute, and it's been some changes too.
Well, it's reflective though, isn't it? I mean, the nature of parenting is things always change.
Yeah. Things do change, and with that, we have to change with it.
Like a nappy. I refer to lots of things in the content I make as nappies.
Yeah.
Well, nappies are extremely philosophical if you think about it.
I'll just hold on a minute.
Yep.
Does that mean we're really crap?
It could be, but it also might mean we're catching the crap.
Right.
See, because it's how deep you want to go.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because a nappy can overfill.
Yep.
It can be like a bung nappy, you know, where the seams aren't done and it leaks out. Yeah. This is a parenting podcast.
Oh, man. And I'm just like, I'm just sailing out of there.
And then you have to like add in the fact of, it's not just the nappy, it's technique of positioning of baby.
Yep.
It's technique of wipages.
Yes.
You know, because there's the whole wipe thing. How many wipes do you use?
And trying to be eco-friendly and using as minimal wipes as possible.
Because sometimes you can't be eco-friendly. You just got to go balls to the wall.
Just get in there.
Wipes.
Yep.
Oh, I had one of those the other day.
Maximize the carbon footprint.
There was so much, you know, that it was like, clean up aisle three. And aisle three was my... lounge.
Oh, dude.
And I was trying to hide it because I was trying to be a good guy and let the wife sleep.
Yeah.
And then I tried so hard, actually left a little bit on the floor. It was that big. It was operation. Uh-oh. And I was Captain Poo. And I missed a bit. And later I was sitting on the couch. And baby's at that age. She's one.
Mm-hmm.
And she's going after any little bit off the floor.
Yeah.
And I kind of looked out the corner of my eye and I saw her reaching for something. And I was like, I better go.
Yeah.
Because like, she's like reaching for everything on the floor. Anyway, I go and I go to grab a little, I thought it was a hard piece of something and it was a soft piece of something.
Oh.
And I picked it up. I was like, you almost ate your own poo. Rad dad is what that is. Yeah.
Next level.
What's next level?
Next level.
Yeah, bro.
All right. So, shall we recap?
Yeah.
What's been happening?
Well, what right from the start?
Well, yeah.
Okay. Well, it's funny because we're kind of more in line with what Rad Dads is at the very beginning.
Mm.
So Rad Dads started as a podcast.
Yep.
And it morphed into like an interview show.
Yep.
And it morphed into like a social experiment and maybe like a philanthropic type venture.
Mm-hmm.
And now we've kind of morphed it back into just us catching up.
And it's not to say that those other things may or may not happen in the future either. But I think towards the end of last year, we were in a position whereby we had to kind of take stock and go, all right, what's next? Where we're at? What can we realistically kind of maintain?
Mm.
And this is where we've landed.
I mean, look, it's realistic too.
Mm.
It's kind of, again, like parenting.
Yep.
And like parenting's funny. And it is like Rad Dads, if you think of Rad Dads as a little... baby.
Mm-mm.
It's like it all of a sudden could walk and then all of a sudden Rad Dads could run and we were getting featured on all of these like media outlets. We were going after world records. We tried to catch the highest rugby ball, which we didn't on the day, but I believe we're going to go and try it again.
Oh, totally.
And then we did all these things for the community, and then like, I don't know, life just pulled you in different ways, and all of a sudden, Rad Dads moved out of home.
Yep. Well, so, maybe not even that. I could interject here with a parenting story from today, in fact. Because, you know, you can be trucking along, you know, you're at you go into the kid's birthday party and everybody's happy and everybody's doing their thing, and then you duck home to get some supplies because the birthday party's going from one venue to another. And so you go home and you get bikes and bike helmets and stuff for sleepovers and whatnot. And you leave two of the four children that you have in the car, in the driveway, in the seats, just while you quickly duck in and get what you need. And then as you're about to walk out the door, you hear the blood-curdling scream. And the youngest manages to get himself out of his buckles, comes barreling up the stairs, and the first thing he says to you is, "I've got a mint stuck in my nose."
Yes. Okay.
And he's emulated his big sister and the magic trick that she was doing, but he thought it was real, and then he's got the mint stuck in his nose, and then you try and get the mint out, and then you end up having to go to the doctor. It feels like that's kind of what happened to Rad Dads.
Yeah.
We had a mint stuck in our nose.
Wait, just a second. This is a true story?
True story. Absolutely 100% true.
Could you see the mint?
Yes. Well, initially, but the more breathing went on, the further back it went.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And it got further and further back.
Did you try and offer advice like snort or...
We tried to blow it out, like get him to... Not inwards, yeah. Outwards.
Wait, if you blew up one nostril, would it...
No, okay. But it could get stuck in the back of your throat.
Okay, well, this is serious. And
yeah,
we are dead doctors.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So thankfully, as a young fella, he's pretty good at blowing his nose. Yeah. Like, some kids really struggle with the whole getting to blow their nose properly. And he's pretty good. So he's 3.5. Blow your nose, buddy. No, that's not coming out. All right, out with the tweezers. We'll go in and digging around. And must have nicked something, because then the blood starts, and then you're like, oh, this is not going well. Now blood in the mint, and the mint's slippery now because it's got blood on it, and you can't quite get it. And then you're going further, and then it's going further back. And yeah, eventually you just go, all right, doctor it is.
Yeah.
Off to the A&E. And you know, you take some solace in the fact that when the doctor says, well, at least it's not Lego. And because eventually the mint will dissolve and you'll be fine.
Yeah,
you just have really fresh breath for the next little bit.
I mean, it's like he's walking. He's basically a Vicks vapor drop, isn't he?
Yeah, walking Vicks vapor drop. So I didn't mean to interrupt kind of that recap, but it kind of felt like, you know, if we were to make the assertion around sometimes stuff comes out of nowhere.
Yep,
and you kind of get taken in a very different direction.
Mm.
I think today's events was probably an appropriate alignment with where we kind of got to with the whole Rad Dad's journey.
Look, and I think the other interesting thing about this whole journey is it's like we're in real time. And I think, you know, a parent should be somewhat in real time with a bit of foresight into the future and a little bit thinking in the past, but primarily in now. Hey, like, it's important that, you know, the kids are happy today, or you are looking, it's kind of your job to think of tomorrow, or maybe the your job to think of the wider scenario and try and keep everyone in the now, because, you know, I think maybe we can lose sight, but things are changing in real time too. Like, when we started the podcast, it's like there wasn't this kind of, you know, great divide of people online. Like, it was still in its infancy, you know, where it was seen as a rose-tinted beauty, you know, this oasis of ideas and things that could be, you know, and that was before, like, people started to kind of know that they were tinkering around with algorithms. We hadn't really heard of algorithms. It was just kind of like this idea of you can, it's a platform, and you can share. And I think now is like, you know, it's good that we are, like a parent should, constantly looking at these things, you know? It's like...
It's what's really interesting, and it's something that... So part of one of the things that's changed in the last few months is that Will and I were working together under the same roof in the same organisation, and now, unfortunately, that is now no longer the case. We're in different organisations, but one of the things that... In my new job I've been working through, I guess, is this idea of hold on to your hats, people. We're going to go a little meta, a little big picture.
Bigger than nappies. Bigger than the metaphor of nappies and mints and nose.
Possibly. So we're in the, you know, there was the information age, and when, so we, you know, there was the first, second, third, fourth industrial revolution, right?
Yep.
Otherwise known as the information or knowledge age. And so what we've got is this really interesting thing in the way that we, as parents, parent our kids, the way that we learn in our vocational settings. And there's this tension between capacity and capability. So traditionally, we would seek out knowledge and information to increase our capacity to do a particular thing. But what's really interesting is that the more we have access to the knowledge and information, the need to increase our capacity is somewhat lessened, because from what I understand, we're almost at capacity all the time, because any piece of information that we would require is at our fingertips, potentially. And so on the flip side of that, there is this idea of capability. So on one hand, capacity is about filling up our cup, whereas capability is about making our cup bigger, so that we, and so that's kind of the tension that we find ourselves in parenting, I think, especially in 2019, is that we're in this transitional time of, there are still those issues of capacity that our kids need to know, you know, tie your shoes, count to 10, those bricks and mortar building blocks of life that are still in play. And so that's a capacity thing. But at the same time, so much of the foundation and what underpins how their worlds are going to look is about giving them the skills to build capability, which is that, how do I give my kid the opportunity to build a bigger cup? And that's not information. That's not Google it. That's not, you know, 9 times 3 is 27. That's a very different set of skills. And I think that's what makes 2019 the single most awesome but single scariest time to be alive and trying to raise a family and kind of navigate your way through it. Because there's this tension that says, you know, these two conflicting forces that say, you know, you got to learn it, but you've also somehow got to make your cup bigger so you can learn more. And they're very, very different. And we've got to try and learn, like, you know, like you always say, in real time, this idea of capability development. And so that's been a real challenge for me, is it's like, you know, what am I doing to build my capability? What am I doing in and around soft skills, around empathy, around, you know, beginning to see the world in that different way? So it's fascinating.
Yeah, bro, it's fascinating. And it's deep. That's what... like, it's pretty deep what you're talking about. It ain't a two-step program.
No.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. And I think what was really interesting for me was when that penny dropped, and it was, I was reading some research around leadership development and horizontal versus vertical, not getting too bogged down in all of that kind of rubbish or carry on or whatever, but it's just that idea of being able to reconcile, what am I supposed to teach my kids when they can get everything that they need to know? Mm-hmm. Like, they're doing tests at school where they could get all the answers in 5 seconds mm-hmm. on their phone, you know, because that's been the tension.
I've been thinking about this, and one of the things I've been thinking about is it's even more important to teach, like, the common ground areas. That's what we kind of lose when we don't have face-to-face, and it's like it's like having a chat. But when you chat to someone in real life, you're not just talking, you're trying to give each other an experience, right? Like, you know, your eye twitches and that sends a signal to the other person, like, I'm not agreeing with you, but I'm not saying it out loud. Like, we're looking for micro expressions, you know, we're built to try and understand and to ultimately give that other person an experience. Like, the experience might be finishing the conversation and feeling better than when you joined it or started it. And it's like, those things aren't even considered. If you look at the communications via text or picture, maybe it's almost like a bandwidth issue, you know? Like, the internet conversation is awesome, but it's a dial-up conversation. And the broadband or the fiber is the real life one, you know, because it's little things like shaking a hand is small talk, right? It's common ground. But it's not just, it doesn't just make you feel good because you shook a hand. You made a win for society. You know, you kind of said, we got this.
Yeah.
You actually shared bacteria. I know that's kind of gross and we don't like touching people anymore. And actually, the whole rule book around physical communication now is up for debate, because things that we kind of took for granted, maybe, you know, take it with your the first date you went on.
Yeah.
It's like awkward as hell, because most of it is like, what's the rules here?
Yeah.
And, you know, let's not go down that rabbit hole. But people are trying to explain what that rabbit hole is, right? And it's all of these things that have been thrust into the open simply because we're now communicating in a different way. And it kind of freaks us out. But that's why I think it's so important to kind of think of the small stuff. Like, I had an example at work where I purposely made small talk, and everyone was like, what are you doing? And I was like, well, you understand when I talk like this, it means we don't have to talk about global warming for 8 hours.
Yeah.
Let's spend 7 hours on global warming and the problem between why men and women don't work anymore. And I was like, well, I don't want to spend 8 hours, because that's why we're all bloody sad.
Yeah.
Because we're having this big conversation all the time. And the little conversation, you know, people are like, why do you ask me how's it going? I was like, do you really care? It's like, kind of. But there's also another level that's happening. It's like we're agreeing that it's like we can go to the film and turn off our brain. I think that's what that is, you know? It's like a common ground. Parenting's an awesome common ground.
Yeah.
You know, because you, again, everyone has to change the crappy nappy.
Yeah, oh no, totally. Totally. And it's so interesting. And I guess what fascinates me is that it's a conversation that doesn't necessarily have an answer. You know, there's the whole issue of you know, when there's the inevitable technology that tries to answer the nonverbal communication question through things like haptics within AR and VR, you know, the virtual handshake. I can put on a glove and I can shake your hand across the world. Wow, that's cool. But what's missing? And again, I think it just comes back to the dialogue that we're having with our kids and with our spouses and our partners and with our communities is changing. And so, like you've said, you know, there's an intensity that comes with that. There's an intensity that says, you know, even the hardiest of hardy souls that could rock backwards and forwards on the balls of their feet and only talk about the rugby on the weekend are being challenged to really confront some significant issues and find a position on them and what have you. So it's not that one thing's changing, everything's changing. And the, you know, to the point that you've made about finding those breaths or those pauses in the conversation where everyone can unilaterally call kind of time out, I just need a breath here for a second, is so important. And so it's, you know, how do you engage in that really big, meaty stuff and still stay sane?
I think part of the solution is dad jokes. Like, we're writing them off because there's two good things dads can do.
Yeah.
And one is mansplain and two is dad jokes. And if you're kind of lucky, three is DIY.
Yeah, yeah,
you
know? Yeah, 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 yeah.
Or you're tall enough to reach the top shelf.
So your go-to?
Go-to what?
Dad joke. I've got two.
Oh, you start.
All right. How many audio engineers does it take to change a light bulb?
How many?
Check 1, 2, 2, 1, 2.
That's quite good. What's Forrest Gump's Gmail password?
What?
1 Forrest 1.
All right. Okay, so why are pirates called pirates?
Why?
I don't know. They just are.
This is small talk at its finest and needed more than ever, by the way.
Oh, exactly.
It's like, dads, you are empowered and should be empowered to tell that small joke, because it's your job to make everyone else not think of the hugeness. Because if you do think of the hugeness of life, it can be a burden. And I'm not saying don't think about it.
No.
I'm just saying anyone would tell you it's not a good idea to constantly think about the big stuff all the time, eh?
Well, I think it's like perspective. You know, we've both been through film school, and, you know, composition 101 in any kind of frame that you watch in a movie, there's foreground and then there's background. There's the stuff that's up close to the lens and then there's the stuff that's drop focused in the background. And it can be a simple rack of the barrel of the lens that shifts the focus from the foreground to the background and vice versa. And I think it's that, I think that's the challenge that we're in, is that, I guess we're transitioning from living a two-dimensional life to that three-dimensional, that third dimension of depth of field that we crave in these beautifully produced movies that we watch. It's that idea that we're moving from watching the news in kind of 2D, or, you know, the old school cartoons where there was no depth. And there's this sort of, there's these, I guess, images that are appearing in the back of the shot out of focus or increasing in focus. And we're kind of watching what's happening here, but we're also acutely aware of what's happening in the background. And it's kind of like our brains are telling us, well, what, you know, what does this mean as this kind of shadowy figure begins to come more and more into focus? And the problem is that as humans, our default mechanism is to see the shadowy, blurry figure as a threat. And then all of a sudden, again, as you know, someone walks into focus and you finally see them and what they are. It's like, wow, not everything is a threat. So, and then it's, yeah, it's just, how do you reconcile that conversation? And most importantly, how do you reconcile it with your kids?
Yeah, yeah. Well, this whole idea of everything is a threat is what happens when you always talk about the big stuff, you know? And for example, that we need to do things against threats to keep everyone safe. It's like, if you really do try and implement something like that, where do you end? And you end by, you know, basically saying kids can't walk to the dairy on their own. And I think the interesting thing about, like, going to that level of trying to keep everyone safe and everything safe is you're just trying to fight against life.
Well, so, and this, I guess this speaks to, I guess, another working theory that I had for a long time, and I'm sure I've shared it here before, but I'm dead set convinced, and, you know, I have my own views, I have my own beliefs and faith as to what the lens in which I choose to see the world. But that aside, and not necessarily pinning it down to any particular faith construct, what I do believe that there's this kind of weird juxtaposition of this onslaught of information that we are being bombarded with, those big questions, those things that we can't make head nor tail of. But with that, we've got so much of it, and we're now at a position where we can create data sets on data sets on data sets that don't actually explain anything else except for increase the anxiety around the mystery in our world. And so the only antidote to that mystery, as we create more and more and more data and we go deeper and deeper and deeper, is some level of faith that says that on some level, regardless of how I want to package it up, I have to have a sense of faith that says it's going to be okay because of X. And I really do believe that. I think in the next 5 to 10 years, you're going to see a real resurgence of that, because the everyday person is going to have such a hard time reconciling this wave after wave after wave of information that really does nothing but increases their anxiety. And life becomes more and more mysterious because the rate of change goes like this and this and this. And so it's going to be really interesting to see where that lands.
I agree.
You know, what the outcome of that's going
to
be.
Look, and including myself and millions of other people, we're trying to balance the fact world with the I don't know world. And like those things, you know, there is a gray matter.
Well, I mean, and I again, I'm sure we've talked about it, but the whole mystery muscle idea, the idea that there was a time in the world where we didn't have information, so therefore mystery was inherent to everything that we did. So we had this really, really well-developed Arnie-type kind of mystery muscle that just kind of did its thing. And sometimes it worked and sometimes it didn't. And things like people believing that the Earth was flat and all sorts of strange and other wonders.
Just on that, bro, like, people still believe that.
I know. There's a Flat Earthers conference in Auckland.
I know. And we better not talk about it too much because they'll come trolling. They'll see us. I mean, my kid even asked me the other day, is like, well, you know, what's some reasons why it's not? And actually, I sat there and I was like, okay, I don't know enough about much apart from, well, I watched Elon Musk's SpaceX video.
Mm.
And when he let that little space rocket man out, it looked round to me, but I was trying to, like, recite some. Well, if you look at masts on an ocean and they slowly start disappearing, that's a sign that it's the curvature, you know? And
yep.
I mean, at the end of the day, I was, like, trying to think, well, maybe Red Dad should raise some money.
Yep.
And build, like, a tiny little rocket with a GoPro on it just for the sole purpose of taking a GoPro and taking a snap. Try and get far enough away. I know it's harder said than done, but we'll just make a tiny little rocket.
Yeah.
Not like a giant one.
Yeah.
Just one that can carry a mini little camera.
And just go,
you know, and just like suss it out so it gets there. I don't know. Or what if it didn't have to get there quickly? Like, what if it was just a light little propeller and it's solar and it just took a year to get up?
Mm-hmm.
But we shouldn't tell anyone apart from now.
Yeah.
And it would finally just take a picture.
Yeah.
Because if I had heaps of money, what I'd do is I'd get the head, or I'll say the top five people of the flat earth thing, and I'd just like pay for them to go up.
Yeah.
And get them to take their cameras. And I mean, that's the other thing. It's like, how do you really prove something to somebody? And that's the mystery thing, right? You can't really.
But again, without getting way too existential, but we live in a post-truth world. And so that's when...
Wait, explain that to me.
Post-truth. So information age, we've got so much information at our fingertips that you or I both know that unless given the skills to do otherwise, left to our own devices, our natural biases and inclinations will find information on the internet that appears credible that will support a particular viewpoint, despite the fact that it may or may not be completely absurd.
Like a bubble.
Yeah, you get lost in the bubble of the own, you know, your own information, because chances are there's somebody out there that will think like you and be offering up theories and what have you. And so it's this idea that truth, you know, here's truth and here's us, and we're beyond truth because now, you know, as evidenced by so much critique around the media and all the rest of it, we're now in a position where people go, it's just not true.
Mm.
It's biased. There's an agenda.
Mm.
So it's not true. And you can't counter that, because even if there isn't, there is in the mind of the person that believes that there is. So we're post-truth. And again, it comes back to my statement around faith. You have to believe in something, because if you don't believe in anything, there is no truth. Everything is relative, and far out. That's a, you know, scientists believe in something.
Well, I'd go as far as to say everyone believes in something.
Mm.
It's just, you know, you can just debate what that something is.
Yeah.
But there is mystery everywhere.
There is mystery.
Because you don't know everything.
But I guess you've got to also be able to believe in some of the tenets that have propped us up this far.
Yeah, no, 100%.
Because if everything's off the table, then that house of cards folds in on itself pretty damn quick.
Yeah, bro.
And so that's what I mean, post-truth. We're just in that world where, and that's what I mean about capability and building capability in our kids and in ourselves to be able to go, well, how do we actually get a... wrestle on muscling some of this information that's supposed to serve us back into a shape where it does serve us rather than us serving it.
I reckon something like parenting is an awesome plan, because it forces you to have some level of, like, there's truths in parenting.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
They cry when they're hungry.
Yep.
Like, there is no more mindfulness than your baby crying or your kid jamming something up their nose.
Yeah.
In that moment, Greg wasn't thinking about anything else than getting that pesky little
mint
out of that nose hole. Yeah, yeah. And that seems like a simple proposition compared to string theory and launching a rocket into space, but it's as complicated as any bloody thing is.
Oh, no, 100%.
And it's like, you got it. You did it. You had the tools. You know, you went to the doctor and they worked it out, you know, and it was like, that will keep you from drifting off the edge of that flat earth, you know, because actually you weren't ever thinking if the world was round or flat or anything in your world. And it was irrelevant at what it was. You just had to get that bloody flat earth out of his nose, eh?
Yeah, exactly.
You know? So that's what I kind of think. That's that small talk thing again. We're too big talk, you know. We're too big scale. And it's like, right now there's people who believe this and that, and we're trying to work out what's the difference. It's like, just take a second, you know?
Yeah.
Like, take a second.
Well, I guess it kind of comes back to, I mean, I don't know how you feel, but, you know, it might be a thought to kind of wrap up on, but this idea of where we want to go next, and it's, I guess it's, you know, we haven't really spoken about this, but from my perspective, I really want this space to be about, one of the reflections that I've had in sort of the little bit of downtime that we've had, is it's really easy to become a vehicle that's putting more noise into a really already crowded and noisy room. And any parent will testify, noise on top of noise when you've got like kids going at it, the only response is more noise. You know, no kid in that situation in a noisy room is going to quieten down. And so this whole concept of listening, it just doesn't happen. And so I guess, I mean, for me, it's about how do we champion a conversation about listening? How do we champion a conversation that says we're not going to necessarily talk at you any more than we are going to want to listen? And I guess with that comes this idea of needing to be more mindful of the conversation that we're engaging in. It's too easy just to talk at, you know, the camera. And kind of expect that people on the other end are going to be listening and digesting and engaging. So from my perspective, I think for us in this kind of season that we're in the space that Rad Dad's in is in at the moment, we really want to try and unpack the conversation around listening. How do we develop the capability? How do we make our listening cups bigger? And what are the things do we need to be talking about and listening to each other about in order to do that? And ultimately, I guess my goal in this season of the podcast would be, you know, how do we rally the dads, the uncles, the mums, the aunties, whoever's still involved and engaged with our community, and to have that conversation? How do we listen better? How do we listen to our spouses better? How do we listen to our kids better? How do we listen to what's happening in our world better and then respond appropriately in a way that, you know, there's always that old adage of in that bar that you walk into, are you going to be scared of the hulking great muscly guy that's running his mouth, or like the little kind of, you know, slightly shady looking guy that's just sitting in the corner not saying a word? And it's like, you pay attention to the little guy because he's the guy that's whose words and actions matter most. I guess that's what I want this to be.
That's deep. That poor little guy. What if he's just Aragorn sitting in the corner,
wow,
waiting? What if it's Frodo? And you're like, get him. And he's like, I've got the ring. Just trying to take it.
It's not that I want to get him. I want to. If I'm scanning the room, I'm paying attention to him.
Yeah.
I'm not paying attention to the guy that's running his mouth.
How about when you go into the bar, say, go home.
Yeah.
Why are you out?
Yeah, you've had too much.
You took the burden of having a family.
Yep.
Go home.
Go home.
Can I end with something that I heard from The Rock?
Yeah.
Just on The Rock, actually, Dwayne Johnson. So my mum went to school with his mum.
Yeah.
And I said to her the other day, I was like, hey, mum, do you reckon you could ask his mum to ask him if he would be on my podcast? She's like, I'll think about it. You know? And I always have that thought in my head, like, aren't you proud, mum? See, look, your friend's son made it. So did yours. He's The Rock.
I was going to say, you're going to jump on the back of that gravy train.
I'm not jumping on the back of anything. But he said in an interview I heard with him online that quite often we underestimate what we can do in a year. No, it's the other way around. We overestimate what we can achieve in a year.
Yeah.
Sometimes we overestimate what we can achieve in a year, but we underestimate what we can achieve over a decade. And I thought that was a really interesting framing, you know, because I think what I'm taking out of what you're saying is we're trying to frame up this world too, you know, to give us maybe not those scientific five bullet points like we've been pushed in the past to come up with. What do you do in this situation? Like, I don't know. Where's people? We're all trying to work it out. But to frame up, you know, maybe some general zones, you know, some common ground again. And I thought his way of in kind of philosophizing that was cool, because we do think a year is, we've got a lot to pump out, you know. It's what Gary V says about the long game, you know. It's just we don't really take that serious, because you also think that's a loser's mindset, you know. That's an easy way out. Like, of course you're not worried about the now because you're going to make it down the road. You've given yourself an out. But I just think we should maybe think a little bit about that even in parenting, because if you give yourself, you want the best relationship in 10 years, not the best relationship this year. And it kind of changes it a bit. It means you're not putting it all in short term. You're kind of trying to get there in the end. And all the movies that we love are all about that point. Like Frodo, it's the long game for him, eh?
Yeah.
Like he has so many fails and then it's at the end he wins. It's like we believe that deep down. We just don't believe it in our own lives. If we fail, whatever that means, maybe you got angry, maybe you were, you know, did something wrong. We like write ourselves off, and social media and that whole world does the same thing. You're blocked. You're out of the circle.
Yeah.
And it's like, I think the biggest thing is just realize that, like, that's part of the long game is you lose, 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 win.
Yeah,
and I that gives me hope.
Or you know, it can be lose lose win 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 lose 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 lose. You know,
yeah.
And on balance, if yeah, no, absolutely, wholeheartedly agree, man.
Awesome. All right, team. Thanks everybody for joining us on Rad Dad's Podcast Season 2. You can like and share and do all of that stuff. We're going to be, you know, a wee bit active and try and get together more often.
You can also jump in the comments, fire us an email, raddadsnz@gmail.com. Just whatever. We'd love to hear from you guys. We'd love to hear from our community, and we'd love to re-engage and just say, hey, look, how do we take this conversation to that next level?
Awesome. Until the next episode, be a radical dadical.
Not a radical dudical.
Nailed it.